Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up Podcast. We're here in Orlando, Florida with Mr. Hank Lebioda. Hank, first question, very important one. Are you still riding the high from last June's Wolfhammer win on No Laying Up's Wild World of Golf?
Obviously. That's the easiest question I'll get all day, I feel like.
What was the reaction like to that? Did anybody say anything to you? Anybody watch it? Did you get comments from anyone?
Yeah, of course. I got messages all over the board. I will say my followers went up by about, I don't know, like 25% for what I had on both my social media accounts. So I got tons of people reaching out. My wife, Mary, met a few people in the crowd at Torrey Pines.
Really?
Yeah. They had come out and said, yeah, we had watched Hank on No Laying Up's Wild World of Golf. Are you here watching him too? Yeah, actually I am.
Kind of am, yeah. I married him because he was on the Wild World of Golf. He was so funny on there. How well could you read back the rules of Wolfhammer if you had to right now?
Not very well. I wouldn't be able to talk the trash. I wouldn't be able to go over all the different points and whatnot, but the main theory behind Wolfhammer, I could get around to people.
Do you think this is a betting game you would take to you and your buddies? It would, for like tour pros, this would be extremely fun to play, I think, because all the dots are like rewarding really good play. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I would. Okay. It's good if you, like you said, for multiple tour pros playing in the same group, it'd be awesome. But you have a tour pro and three amateurs in the same group.
Yeah, we kind of dragged you down a little bit. We got roasted pretty good in the comments for that, deservedly so. But it was like, it's a little nerve wracking to be like actually competing. I mean, we get to play with pros a decent amount, but like getting in the betting game that's getting filmed was like, oh man, everyone's gonna see this shank and my grips were wet. Rady roasted me pretty well for that. So. Well, we got a lot to cover with you. I think a lot of people, myself included, don't really know a lot about your story. I kind of got a bit of it, the background when we played, but said we needed to sit down and do a podcast and kind of go through it all. Now that you've spent a couple weeks on the PGA Tour, I thought that'd be kind of good perspective for all that you've been through in golf and kind of riding the smaller tours into the web tour and into the PGA Tour. I got a lot to cover. So going back to the beginning, kind of what's your background in golf? Like, usually I like to do some research on guys. Your Wikipedia page isn't too thick yet, so I don't have a ton of info.
I'll get my agent on that and get Drew to kind of pump it up a little bit.
Just throw just volume of words is all we're really looking for in there. So
how I got started in golf.
If we start some controversy on this podcast, that might beef that up a little bit, so just keep that in mind.
Yeah,
so.
Okay, awesome. How I got started in golf, actually, when I was growing up, my mom was a stay-at-home mom. Dad would be at work. When he would come home to get me out of her hair, he would bribe me with ice cream to go to the local driving range. And this was, I mean, back then it was awesome in my eyes. I was, this is the best. It's so much fun, mainly because I got ice cream on the way home. And so that's how he got me into playing golf, or at least got me around the game and whatnot. What really got me going was I had my best friend still today lived on a golf course. And he and his older sister and his dad would play golf all the time. They had a cart, and so during summers we would go spend 10 hours a day at the golf course between hitting balls, chipping, putting, walking 18 holes, playing Tiger Woods 2004 on the GameCube back at his house, having pizza at his house for lunch, and coming back out to the golf course, doing swim practice, and you name it, we were spending time there, and that's what got me hooked.
Well, that is the same for me. So why am I lugging all this microphone equipment around here? Like, that sounds exactly like my childhood. We would play 10 hours a day, and God, I can't even break 70 anymore. So, what was your junior career like? When did you? I love asking people this question, and it's kind of hard to brag on yourself in that way. But like, when did you know that your talent was different, and that this was something that you really wanted to pursue?
Well, I was a big Florida State fan growing up. So my mom went to high school in Tallahassee. She grew up in Tallahassee. My grandparents still lived there when I was growing up. So I would go, like, the last Florida State Notre Dame football game before 2014, I went to that game in Tallahassee, and I spent all my holidays up there. So Thanksgiving, one Thanksgiving, my uncle was there with us. He took me to the baseball stadium lifted me up over the edge of the fence, the kind of the side fence, and I acted like I hit a home run and ran around the bases and whatnot. And so when I was in, I guess I would have been a freshman in high school, Coach Jones, Coach Trey Jones at Florida State, saw me play at Dothan Country Club at the Future Masters. I ended up winning the event, but I was carrying this obnoxious Florida State golf bag. Like I use one when I'm at home, and it's not even as obnoxious as what like the team uses.
Are you like going down the fairway doing the Seminole chop?
In my eyes, I probably was. But Coach was walking, obviously in full gear, full Florida State gear, and my parents go up to him like, "Hey, like you have to have something to do with the program, like." Who are you? And he's like, oh, I'm the head golf coach. I'm here. One of our campers, actually Tom Lovelady, was playing in my group. He had shot 65 the first round. And he's like, Tom was just at our golf camp. And so I just wanted to come up and see him play. I'd just spent a week with him working on his swing and whatnot and saw that he'd play well. Dothan's only 2 hours away from Tallahassee. So yeah, I'll pop up. And it just happened to be, I was playing with Tom. I was carrying this very loud, obnoxious Florida State golf bag. And my parents there on the spot said, hey, if you offer Hank like a 30% scholarship right now, like he'll take it. And he's like, yeah, good. Yeah, that's pretty funny, blah, blah, blah. And he probably should have taken that offer in hindsight.
What age was this?
I think it would have been like entering my freshman year of high school.
Okay.
So about 13 or 14.
And is that typical for the recruiting process to start it at that point? I guess at least coaches start making contact and whatnot.
It is early, but I kind of expedited the process because of how much I love the university and the town.
And so your parents offer Florida State a 30% scholarship. Exactly. And then as your junior and high school career kind of takes off, the recruiting process flips and you are a very highly recruited high school player. Is that right?
Yes, I would. If you want to say that.
Yes.
Yeah. I didn't really open it up.
I knew you wouldn't say it, so I had to say it out loud.
I didn't open it up to many schools.
Okay.
Because I knew where I wanted to go. I committed to Florida State.
What schools did you open it up to?
I visited University of Virginia and South Carolina.
Okay.
Loved them both. Honestly, had a great time.
Kind of the token visits of like, all right, I got to go see somewhere else.
I needed to do something.
Yeah, okay.
But I was playing, I had played baseball all that time. So I'd played on our varsity team my freshman year of high school. And at that point in time, like, so played varsity that year. So it would have been right after I met, almost a year after I had met Coach Jones, about 8 months, 9 months or so. I go up, play the junior AM that next summer. Coach Jones is there, sees me, watches me play, says, hey, man, whenever we have a spot for you, we're going to keep a spot for you. You're our man. Let's do this whenever you're ready. And so at 14 years old, I'm like, oh, or 15 years old, I'm like, oh, my word, this is awesome. I can't believe this is happening. But I had to make the decision whether I wanted to actually pursue this, go on, try to play college golf, which I didn't really know much about. I knew it was, you know, going to play golf at Florida State or being at Florida State was a huge goal of mine. But at 15 years old, when the opportunity just presents itself to you, it's...
You don't have world perspective at all yet, at age 15. Not even a little bit.
No, not at all. And I needed to make a decision whether I wanted to keep playing baseball or not once I had committed. So talked it over with my parents. Dad actually told me it was a bad idea to quit playing baseball. He said I was better at baseball than I was at golf. But I said, no, this is what I want to do. I have this opportunity to go to Florida State, which was, like I said, where I wanted to be. And I wanted to be with Coach Jones. He's a man who I trusted, man who I thought was going to make me better. And I took that leap of faith at 15 years old.
All right, guys, a quick break to let you know we are giving away a Callaway Epic Flash driver. All you got to do is go on to iTunes, leave a 5-star review, and leave a funny ratings. Funny story, do something in there that makes us laugh. You can do a poem, a song, anything. And we will, to the person that gives the best or funniest review, we will give away a Callaway Epic Flash driver. Again, that's all you got to do. And if you've done one in a previous contest, go on to your friends' accounts or whatever. Do whatever you got to do. Leave us a 5-star review. Go to CallawayGolf.com to hear more about Flash Face and how they are changing the game with drivers. Now back to our podcast with Hank Lebioda. So when did you discover that you had, or when did you find out that you had Crohn's disease?
It would have been, like New Year's of 2012, 2013.
And how old were you then?
I would have been 18.
Okay. So this is before you got to college?
No, this was middle of my freshman year of college.
For those that don't know what Crohn's disease is, how would you describe it to somebody? Because after reading your story, I dated a girl in college that had Crohn's disease, and looking back, I was not sympathetic enough at all to what she was going through. I think you had it much worse than she did. I'll give myself that. But after reading about it, I'm like, oh, shit, that's what Crohn's disease is.
Yeah, just keep pumping your ego there, Solly.
No, you're better than you think you are. I need to like save it a little bit there because, yeah, if you're listening to this, I apologize for sophomore year of college, but continue.
No, we're not our best selves at that age. I think everybody in the room right now would agree with that. So Crohn's disease, like the easiest way to describe it, it's an inflammatory disease in your bowel syndrome, like in your gut, basically. I'm infected in my terminal ileum, which is basically the connection between your small and large intestine.
And what does your dad do?
He is a retired gastroenterologist.
what's like, is there not incredible irony in that?
I mean, yes. If you want to get like into a very ironic story, he's a very accomplished doctor. He's a stud. He's really, mm-hmm. really good. He's really smart. He's very respected in his industry or in his practice. He worked here in Orlando for about 30 years, but he had only treated patients in either a hospital bed or in like a consultation office or whatever it may be. He's never actually seen Crohn's disease play out in everyday life. So when I had been first diagnosed and I dropped ultimately about 30, 35 pounds as an 18-year-old.
What was caught? I mean, so going up, growing up,
yes.
It just didn't have the same effect as it did, I guess, starting freshman year of college, or did things get worse for you around that time? Or were you dealing with this?
There are three main causes for Crohn's. So you have stress as a big component if you're predisposed to it. So there's some gene in my body that says, hey, you are either going to have Crohn's, you will get Crohn's, or you are likely to get Crohn's. And then getting sick. So my senior year of high school during prom, and as some of the listeners may know, like the Sage Valley Junior Invitational, like the tournament for mm-hmm. all junior golfers, I had salmonella.
Oh, yeah. How'd you get that?
Eating raw chicken here in Orlando at a local chicken tender shop.
That I'm guessing you don't go to anymore.
No, but that teaches you to not get grilled chicken at a chicken tender shop.
There you go.
Yes, exactly. So I had salmonella during senior prom and Sage Valley, which was, in my mind, like the worst thing that could ever happen.
Right.
Sage Valley did an unbelievable job of, you know, providing for me and making sure, like, they built a fake toilet for me. And they had two doctors, or not doctors, but what would you call them?
Nurses, medical staff.
Two people on medical staff followed me around just to make sure, like, if I had an episode or if I had, like, I passed out, then they'd have someone there for me. But from that, it was kind of a 8-month process. So you get diagnosed with salmonella. Once you go through kind of that gastrointestinal just nightmare that is salmonella, a lot of times you get IBS, irritable bowel syndrome. So irritable bowel syndrome is just kind of a repercussion of it. It's not going to last forever, but it's just going to be kind of your body working back to normal, or what it feels is normal. IBS for about 2 months, enroll in school. I gained about 10 pounds back that I had lost, 10 of the 20 pounds that I had lost.
Through beer or through?
No, this is before I got to school.
Gotcha.
So this is summer leading up to my freshman year. Get to school.
But just to be clear, Leah, yes. Going up through your childhood, you had no symptoms of this at all? Nothing. No indications?
No, okay. I was healthy.
Okay.
Get to Florida State, start on a pretty significant like workout program, and I'm doing great. I'm doing awesome. I had played in 3 of the 4 events my freshman year, which I was super pumped about. Everything was going good. Our last event in Cabo at the Cabo Collegiate, which is easily one of the best college events like I played in my 4 years at Florida State. Get there. I brush my teeth with the water in the hotel the last day.
Oh, no.
Montezuma's revenge. So I had Montezuma's revenge the week after that. Not great. It's fine. Mm-hmm. Like I'm fine at that point. in the big scheme of things. Get the flu going into finals.
Jeez.
Have finals, have the flu, and at that point it snapped. That's when everything went bad.
So are you going to the hospital for this? Is it like what when you, everything goes bad, is it just like I can't get out of bed? I can't even
at that point? Yeah. No. At that point, I was still fine. I actually went and played the South Beach AM during, I guess it would have been right after finals. Finished second, lost 20 pounds during the event, even though we were riding in carts the whole time.
Lost 20 pounds during the event.
Yeah.
And you finished second.
I finished second.
Remember when I was complaining about my wet grips during Wild World of Golf? Like, that's what reading some of this, I'm like, wait a second. Like, all the little things that bother me in golf, if like 10% of what had happened to you would have happened to me, I'd be like, oh, I'm withdrawing. Like, I'm out for sure. So you lose 20 pounds, and yes. Then what's the next step after that?
Next step, so I get home, ghost white. Dad's looking at me like, man, you look awful.
Something's up here.
Yeah, you look terrible. And he's like, let's lay down. Let's see what's going on. Basically, I'm on bed rest for Christmas. Don't do much. I'm not practicing or anything like that. Have to withdraw from another, I think it was the Patriot All-American Amateur, which was right after Christmas, which sucked. I hated withdrawing. I think it's still
That's clear at this point that you got a medical staff following around Sage Valley and you're finishing second, losing 20 pounds. You're not going to withdraw from
that. No, I still think that's the first tournament I've actually, and only tournament I've withdrawn from.
Wow.
And have to withdraw. And he's like, all right, you're not going out to Arizona. We're going to get colonoscopy done. We're going to see what's actually happening. So 18 years old, getting your first or second colonoscopy. It's not the best, not the best like record you have right there.
Right.
Go through the process. So as some of the listeners may know, when you have a colonoscopy, you have to take prep to kind of get your whole system flushed out and ready to roll for the scope the next morning. And the prep didn't work. The laxatives didn't work.
Really?
I had a complete obstruction in my gut. So I'm rolling around at 4 a.m. on the ground, like screaming. Like I have like a complete obstruction in my gut. Nothing can get through. Go to the emergency room. Next day, so it would have been like almost 30 hours after I had taken the like the prep that it actually worked through and I was able to have my colonoscopy. Came back, mild to severe Crohn's, and I spent... would have been right after Christmas 2012 through New Year's 2013 in the hospital.
Jeez. Mm-hmm. And like, did you even know the word Crohn's to that point?
I knew it, but I had no idea what I was getting myself into.
Okay. So you spend all that time in the hospital and then you seem open to talk about it. Was this embarrassing at the time? Is it like kind of like at the, you know, at a younger age, was that different to go through than it is to kind of accept it now?
I will say this just to lead off. I am perfectly comfortable talking about it. I think it's with all invisible diseases, not just Crohn's disease or colitis even, people are shy to talk about it.
Sure.
It's kind of, if you look at me now, you would have no idea that I have Crohn's disease. It's it's a nasty disease that takes tons of lives and ruins people's lives. But at the same time, I have a platform. I have a platform to speak about it. I have a platform to show that, hey, I am not perfectly fine, but I am comfortable sharing my story. I love talking about it. I love getting people's awareness up about Crohn's disease, and it's something I'm proud of.
So what, after you spend all that time in the hospital, what changes then for you? Is it like
everything?
let's start. What do we start with?
Like you said, I only knew Crohn's by name. I had no idea what it was. Had support groups come in and speak to me and say, hey, like talking to me like I was on my deathbed. I'm like, man, guys, like I'm not like I don't feel well, but like this disease isn't going to do anything to me. Like I'm still going to be the same. I'm still going to work hard. I'm still going to be me. And lying in my hotel, or not my hotel bed, excuse me, my hospital bed, my hospital bed. You know, I'm looking at this and said, this is an opportunity. This is an opportunity for me to go show people that, hey, you can live outside the boundaries that Crohn's creates. And I decided that moment that I was going to be part of the solution instead of the problem. And I was going to be part of my solution. And I'm going to use this opportunity to go show people how great your life can be despite having Crohn's disease. But you're saying what changed? I was saying everything changed. Everything changed. Diet, sleep.
How'd your diet change?
Oh, I mean, I went from typical freshman in college. I ain't a little better than typical freshman and college kid to chicken and rice for 2/3 of my meals, plain eggs with dry toast, water and Pedialyte only as drinks. No coffee, definitely no lactose, like no milk, no. I could have a little bit of turkey and cheese sandwich would be fine, salmon, but that was it. I was on a like super old man's diet.
So that's what I got this from Ryan Lavner's article about you. It says no milk, no fried foods, no salad, no acidic foods, no caffeine, and you couldn't sleep on your stomach anymore.
Correct. That was about 3 months of sleeping on my back.
And is that what of those is still relevant today? All of those are, I'm guessing the sleep maybe has changed.
No, I could okay. sleep wherever I want. And okay. My wife will tell you that I'll roll all over the bed just fine. No, I still stay away from fried foods okay. as much as I can.
No fried foods. So, but you can drink caffeine now. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
As you took a big sip of coffee. that makes sense now. So what from that, okay. So what from those changes still exist today? I mean, is it alcohol bother you? Is it any, how is the disease handled today?
I'm extremely fortunate. Honestly, I'm very healthy. As you can tell, I got quite a bit of weight on me now compared to where I was my freshman year when I was diagnosed. But no, it's just, it's an everyday management type of situation. So it's a, I look at tournaments when I go to events. I'm a little bit more strategic about where I eat or how much I eat, when I eat, when I have my coffee in the morning, what's going on the golf course, where are the certain bathrooms that you could find on the golf course. I know it sounds so wild to think about, but...
Well, I was going to say the Gator Invitational might be one yes. I have to ask about then, because that's also from Lavner's article. But yes. There's one line in there that says, Lebioda stopped at every restroom during his round and finished 12th that week.
Yes.
And how many restrooms were on the course?
Man, that place is a dump. can't remember how many bathrooms. If I had to guess, there's one right in the middle of the golf course, because that's how it's routed. And okay. you can get to it on, it would have been both sides, but you hit it probably two, maybe three times out on the golf course. Okay.
That's not as much as maybe it makes it sound. But I mean, are you thinking about it the whole time? Yeah. Are you like, I feel sick and you just don't?
Hey, you got to hit a driver. You got to hit a bunker shot or something like that. And you're kind of getting into your stance. Like, man, my stomach's kind of like turning a little bit.
Oh, God.
Of course it's on your mind.
Yeah. I mean, how much did it affect your play? I mean, is it?
Not much, obviously.
So, and then you ended up being the ACC freshman of the year that yes. year, despite all this going on. So, I know you told us some of that story, but reading that was just kind of stunning to see, like, tell us about like the procedures you had to do on your stomach or still have to do on your stomach.
Yeah. So, I was fortunate enough to never have to go into surgery, which was huge. Mm-hmm. It is massive. The operation to have either like to deal with Crohn's, if you're going to go in and have surgery, is it's nasty. I mean, they cut open your stomach, they cut out the infected area in about 5 centimeters on either side, and they just sew it together. So it doesn't really treat any issue.
Right.
It just takes the problem out. And then you're left with a gut that's sewn together by stitches, a stomach, like a skin that's sewn together by stitches, all your muscles in there are screwed up from it. And then you're out for 3 months,
yeah.
if that's the case, before you can really do much. Mm-hmm. But I've been on a regular dose of Humira, which is essentially just a shot. Imagine it like a massive Bic highlighter mm-hmm. is how I describe it to people. You don't see the needle ever. And I'd give myself a shot every other Thursday. Just pinch some fat in the stomach, stab myself, click the pin, hold it for 10 seconds. And that's how I get my medicine.
It's kind of like, looks like an EpiPen or something like
yes.
that.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's just, that's every other Thursday you said? Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, that's still like pretty, like, do you ever forget to do it? Or
yes.
is it like, okay,
yes, I do.
What happens if you forget to do it?
It's kind of like a guilty conscience kind of situation. I take it the next day or as soon okay. as possible.
That's not too bad. All right. Well, I'm sure I appreciate you talking about that. I know you've probably talked about it a lot, but I just hearing that story was just like, it's stunning to kind of see what you've overcome. But all right. So after Florida State, I kind of want to talk just through your professional career to date. So I like asking guys this, how do you decide what you're going to do right after college? Because you ended up playing PGA Tour Canada. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think about when thinking about Canada, Latino America? Is it more kind of the climate you're looking for? Is it, you know, you go to both Q schools and figure yeah. it out? Like, what was your thought process out of college?
I did not know much about the Latin America Tour when I was in school. But what I did know is the Canadian Tour season picked up. Actually, it started... It would have been the week of the national championship that we had my senior year out in Eugene, Oregon. So for me, that was the easiest route. I wasn't going to get any web exemptions. I definitely was not going to get any PGA Tour starts coming out of college. So I needed a place to play. And I figured, look, this is a spot where if you play well, you can earn yourself like web starts or even web status. I didn't quite understand what it meant at the time, but I knew the ultimate goal was to get to the web, to get to the PGA Tour. Mm-hmm. And that was going to have to be my route. I wasn't going to be able to, like I said, get exemptions, earn enough money through exemptions and whatnot.
And how many people get, for the listeners, how many people get routed to the web tour from the Canadian tour?
Five.
And how many people play the Canadian tour?
A lot. A lot of people play the Canadian tour.
So you going out there to start, is it overwhelming with how many people are out there and how small the needle is to try to get through?
Yeah. At first, yes. And you have no idea what to expect. I had never played in a professional event before Victoria, not the Vic Open, but the BC Championship. Mm-hmm. I'm blanking on the name. Is out in Victoria, British Columbia. But I went straight there from Eugene, so I had no idea what to expect. None at all.
If you would have guessed where, are you in your mind? Are you the 200th best player in the world? The 2000th best player in the world? Is it all very overwhelming for kind of what you got yourself into?
Yes. Yeah. Very overwhelming. And it's just more one of those like, okay, do I have to go register? Am I actually a professional this week? Am I sure I want to, sign, say, yes, I am a professional and you go down this path for the next 3 years minimum.
What's the Canadian tour like for those that have never experienced it, myself included? I mean, do you drive from course to course? Do you bunk up with people? I mean, are you making more money than you're spending, or how's that work?
The Canadian tour is awesome. It is so much fun. Yeah. And I'll say this about the Latin America tour as well. But the Canadian tour is a blast. In Canada, for us, it felt like you're in the 51st state. And that's what one of the rules officials had described it to me as. Mm-hmm. And the hospitality that we get up there is unreal. A majority of the time, you'll stay with billets or host house. And you'll get a rental car in that situation, or if you do a hotel, say the host hotel, they'll have transportation provided. You're always bunking up with somebody. Yeah. No one's making enough money up there to kind of ride solo.
But do you have sponsors at this point to kind of help you with any costs, or are you just slumming it from city to city, or how's it work?
A lot of guys are slumming it.
Okay.
A lot of guys are kind of, eating what they kill type of situation. I was fortunate enough to sign on with Titleist right after I graduated from college. So they were my main sponsor and still are my main sponsor today. And that's what helped me get started, honestly.
And do you have a caddy that goes with you, or are you local? No. Caddies?
Local.
Everybody's got caddies on.
Yes. I think the fee was like $35 a day Canadian. Oh my God. And everyone's hopping on that. And even if the Canadian tour, I don't think it was mandatory to take a caddy the first two rounds. Okay. So guys would carry their own bag first two rounds.
Any pushcart mafia guys out there?
No, pushcarts were not allowed.
They're not allowed?
Not allowed. Frowned upon.
Oh, man. That's
very
weak.
Frowned upon.
So you how did your 2016 season go on the Canadian Tour? Did you play well? You can look at results and mm-hmm. see it, but did you feel like you played well and you felt like, all right, I belong out here?
I thought I did. I thought I played well. Yeah. And then when we got done with the year and I got through to first stage of web.com Q School, I was like, oh, well, I guess I didn't play that well.
What did you finish on the Canadian Tour?
Would have been 33rd.
But you can still get through to web through the qualifying.
Yes.
And then exactly. You went to Q School, and what happened? You said,
Made it through first stage mm-hmm. and then bombed out at second stage. And so you have had this gap from, would have been beginning of November till May. Until my season started back up.
The reason why I want to kind of go step by step on this mm-hmm. is a lot of people that listen to this podcast and to tune into golf on the weekend, watch PGA Tour guys, and the path to the guys getting there gets a bit lost as mm-hmm. far as how good the cream of the crop are.
Yes.
I mean, I was playing golf a couple weeks ago with a guy who had played Canadian Tour 2 years ago, but took the last year off and wasn't sure if he wants to do it again because he's just like, dude, like it's so competitive on the Canadian tour. We're talking Canadian and then web and then PGA tour. So so you're back kind of at the same place, I guess, after 2016. So you go Latino America and Canadian tour in 17. How did that process start?
Well, my agent and I sat down and said, hey, look, either we're going to travel around, play Monday qualifiers to web.com events or PGA tour events, which I have no status on to begin with. Mm-hmm. So There's no room for advancement at that point. I'm just kind of playing one day shootouts to try to get into a tournament. Or do I go the route of Latin America and play the PGA Tour Latino America? And we decided that, yeah, this is another opportunity to go get to theweb.com, and it's something I should pursue. And so I went down in January to Bogota, got conditional status, not very good status at all. I actually didn't get into the first event. I went down to the Monday qualifier for that.
Qualifier for PGA Tour Latino America.
Yes.
In 2017.
In 2017.
Okay. You're making starts on the PGA Tour in 2018.
Yes, so, exactly.
Well, yeah, continue.
I didn't get through. Shot a couple under, didn't get through, and flew back home. It's like, man, what am I going to do? Is this how it's going to be? God, is this how nutty. It's going to be for the rest of the spring until summer comes around?
Because I watch guys go Monday, try to Monday qualify for PGA Tour events. I'm like, man, that seems like a heavy lift to fly all the way to Arizona to try to Monday
it in. Is.
And you're flying to South America to try to Monday in the PGA Tour Latino America.
Yes.
Okay.
So I was fortunate enough, like I said, didn't get into the first event in Bogota, but I got into Argentina, which was the second event. It was 2 or 3 weeks later, got in the Friday night before the event. It was told Claudio Rivas called me and said, hey, you're in. You want to get down here? I'm like, yeah, I want to get down there, but how do I get to Argentina? how long is this flight going to be? So we start looking in the flights. I'm like, oh my word, this is going to be so expensive.
How much?
It was $2,000.
Okay.
The flight to get down.
Honestly,
there.
Not as bad as I would have expected.
No. For a last minute flight like that. Yeah.
Pretty good.
So pack up everything, short notice, just head on down there. And this is one where I said, you know, no one's making enough to bunk up with people. Mm-hmm. I was bunking by myself this week and it was not fun. It was tough. It was a big hit. It wasn't, flying down to Argentina, paying for that flight and then paying for the hotel room by myself. The Latin tour works a little different than the Canadian tour. Whereas like Canadian tour, you have billets and you have host hotels with transportation provided. Everything's on your own on Latin America.
Okay.
So you can do Airbnb, you can find a Priceline hotel or hotels.com, whatever it may be, but you're on your own. And so it ends up morphing into a bunch of guys staying in the same area, renting one rental car between six or seven guys and just making it work.
And if you could have it one way, you probably would have hoped everything to be arranged kind of on the Latino America side versus the Canadian side. Just with language barriers and structure and culture and whatnot, it's probably a lot harder to do on your own in Latino America.
It is, but that's I was going to get into is like that's I'm so thankful for.
Yeah.
And then the PGA Tour Latino America, I think it's honestly probably the best developmental tour that I could have ever been on.
Okay.
And it was such a challenge, so much different, like you said, culture, different language, so many things that I was not used to.
You're dealing with a lot, and it seems like whoever deals with all of the other variables the best probably plays the best golf.
Yeah.
Because that's a lot of distraction. People kind of take it for granted, you know, flying to different countries, different cultures, and watching the top guys do it over and over again. But that's just like a lot going on outside of just playing the golf course. And the golf courses are pretty different down there as well, right?
I mean, we went 1 week, we were in Quito, Ecuador, which is at like 9,000 feet elevation, to Dominican Republic
on the coast.
Just right on the water.
So then you play really well in Latino America.
Yes.
And then are you close to getting top five Latino America to get web status? You end up back on the Canadian tour. How did that work? Mm-hmm.
So during the entire spring, like I had mentioned, I only had conditional status. So I had to top 20 into each event, next event. So I went, I think, four straight top 20s. It ended up being like four straight top five finishes, I think, but just kept top 20, top 20, top 20, so I can keep playing in these events. The Latin America tour stops. They take the summer off and then they pick up again in the fall.
Because it's winter down there.
Yes.
In South America.
It's kind of some places,
close to the equator. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's kind of the same.
But it works well with the Canadian tour schedule for the most part. So I was able to go, I think I ended up playing 14 or 15 Latino America events and 7 PGA Tour Canada events between the two tours. So I had a full schedule. I was all over the place, but I had a full schedule. Played well all spring in Latin America. Spent the summer in Canada, played well in Canada, and then went back down to Latin America once the Canadian tour finished up.
And you won in Canada in 2017. How did you – so did you get status then through the Canadian tour, through the web tour?
I actually finished 11th on the money list.
11th in Canada.
TJ Vogel beat me by $124 Canadian dollars over the full season, and he got the 10th spot, which was an automatic exemption into final stage Q school.
Oh, God.
And TJ, if you're listening, I'm sorry. I still hold that over your head.
So you didn't get any status through Canadian or Latino America in 17?
No. Oh. So I ended up finishing sixth on the money list in Latino America, which got me to final stage.
Okay. Yes. And then you got your web status.
I played well at final stage.
Got all the way through. And then good season on the web.com tour. You come out in 2018, which is, again, just last year. When you get out to the web tour, I feel like it's more of a, it gets closer to a full test of golf more so than it is in some of the stops you would make in Canada and Latino America. Does that make any sense?
Yes, it does. Kind of. Make sense. Yeah, I understand. I understand what you're getting at.
Yeah.
Golf courses are more difficult. The atmosphere is more like what you would assume is like a tour event almost.
Correct.
Yes.
And it kind of, like, and I think it just kind of gives you a different, can give you a different level of confidence too, to be in a different group of peers. So mm-hmm. when you get out there, what's the competition like compared? I feel like Latino America and Canada, you're so far at the bottom mm-hmm. that it can be kind of overwhelming for how much you have ahead of you.
Yes.
And then as you get further up, it's like, all right, now I know what my competition is at this level and what I need to beat to get to the top level.
Because, I mean, web.com every week, you're going to have former either PGA Tour champions mm-hmm. or just PGA Tour multi-year players on the PGA Tour.
Correct.
So you can see how good they are, how good they were, what their game is like. That's what they used at the next level.
So the web tour courses and the setup there, was that a good fit for you, do you think?
Yeah,
maybe it worked too. So. It got you to the PGA Tour, but some guys talk like, man, I think I honestly would have more success on the PGA Tour because the way courses set up, etc. So I was curious as to how you viewed those courses.
Yes, but
you think
same
people are making excuses?
Yeah, I think they're making excuses. I think good players will play good
the cream
golf.
Rises, no, without a doubt. But I think somebody, you look at a guy like Cameron Champ, who I think was, I mean, he got to the PGA Tour. Obviously,
he came to the web stud, tour. Though.
He is, but I think he was held back a bit by setups on the web tour.
Yes and no.
Okay.
Yes and no. I mean, he had, what, like six straight top 10 finishes, including a win?
Well, he has clearly emerged on the PGA Tour as the top guy coming, graduating from the web class, and he didn't win the web finals or didn't win the money list last year.
But, I mean, like Sung Jae-im's doing awesome. Sam Burns is a pretty good player.
Hey, you can disagree with my theories here. I'm just throwing these out here. Okay. So you play the web tour.
Yes.
Like, what is your game like? You're 5'11". You're not a big guy, but you're a longer hitter on tour, correct?
I'm long enough.
Okay.
How about
you're not a bomber, but you're long enough.
I classify myself as long enough.
Okay. That's a good thing for the PGA Tour. What were kind of the highlights, I guess, of the web tour season?
Highlights of the web tour season as in like where I played well?
Yeah,
or
where you played well, what you learned, and what was that experience like playing on the web.com tour?
I love being on the web.com tour. I mean, it was fun. It was obviously a step up in competition. Every week you go from in Latin America or the Canadian tour where 10 to 15 guys could win each week to 75 guys could win each week on the web.com. And the PGA Tour, everyone that's there has a chance to win starting the week.
Mm-hmm.
But the web.com tour was, I had a blast, honestly, go to a bunch of different places. That's the first time you're really traveling alone. Like, you're not really traveling in a pack like you were on the Latin America tour or on the Canadian tour. You're staying in hotel rooms by yourself. You have a full-time caddy that week. You have more gyms available to you. You have physios available to you. You're hitting good golf balls on the range. You have ropes up. You have grandstands. You have things like that. And it kind of is like, as a rookie last year, I was like not quite getting my feet wet, a little bit more than getting my feet wet into what like a PGA Tour event would be like, or what, you know, the end goal, like the PGA Tour lifestyle is, or PGA Tour week is like. It taught me a whole lot, honestly.
And for the listeners at home, how did you earn your card? How did you make your way to the PGA Tour?
I was in the season-long 25 guys.
And where did you finish on that?
25.
So you get your card, but you go into the PGA Tour season, the bottom of the rank priority.
I was 49 out of 50.
So you're going to play every single PGA Tour event that you get to.
Correct.
The last event of the regular season, you have kind of a celebration going there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go through the web finals, and then it's like straight almost a week late, 2 weeks yes. later, straight to the Safeway.
Yeah.
We PGA Tour.
Yeah.
Are you nervous as hell to tee it up on the PGA Tour for the first time?
I was. Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad that, I don't know who caught it on camera, but caught my first tee shot.
They got it Safeway. On camera?
Yeah. I mean, it was the longest drive I hit all season. Hands down.
Just because the adrenaline was pumping?
Yeah, everything was pumping. Everything was going. I was moving nice, and the ball just went. It was a great shot.
I mean, has there been a moment on your time on tour yet that you've been kind of starstruck or kind of look around like, oh my God, I am actually here? Like,
yeah, this playing. Last, the Torrey Pines.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What was that moment?
I'm practicing on the putting green Wednesday, and then like all of a sudden you have like 10 to 15 kind of security guards start moving people around.
I know where this is going.
Ropes start going up, and it'd already been like crowded around the putting green because pro-am day, so you got a lot of different guys kind of moving in and out, teeing off on the north or south course. And like this big group of people is around and start, it's like kind of hear like the rumbling of people chattering and whatnot. And then all of a sudden just screams, "Tiger, Tiger." And it's dead stop, whatever drill I was working on or whatever putt I was hitting. And just kind of look.
You were going to say Brant Snedeker. I'm sorry, Brant.
And here comes Joe Lacava with his bag, throws it down on the putting green, and security guards are holding everyone back. And then here comes Tiger, just emerges from this crowd of people to the putting green. I'm like, oh my God, are it's you start happening. Thinking,
like, he's watching me. You're like, think he's watching this putt, or is he looking at me right now? Like, what's going through your mind?
Nothing like that, but I did give him like plenty of room on the putting green whenever on the same
you're not the same putting green, the same hole?
No. He's earned his own hole at this point in time.
So what, you missed your first two cuts on the tour. Was that nerves, or were you just not quite how does that happen in your mind?
I wasn't ready to play coming Safeway.
Okay.
No.
Why was that?
I was too busy looking at everything going on around me.
Okay.
Way too busy kind of soaking in the scenes, you know, just like being awestruck about being on the PGA Tour and playing in your first event. Mm-hmm. And of course that...
Which is natural.
Yes. Yeah. It is natural. You wish you could not get sucked into it, but it's going to happen.
Yeah.
On a course that I actually really enjoyed. I thought I was going to play well there. Got just completely obliterated. Wasn't even close to making the cut. Go to Sanderson Farms, missed by one with a few bad holes coming down the stretch. And I was disappointed. Honestly, I was. Because I knew that while that was all happening, like I needed to make cuts. Otherwise, I was going to get just completely left in the dust with this reshuffle.
Yeah, because in the fall, the top players are not filling out the fields in a lot of those events. So you got all the guys that just graduated from the web tour are able to get into all those events. And then there's a reshuffle after Sony. Is that right?
No, after RSM.
Oh, after RSM. At the end of the fall, there's a reshuffle. So you got to play well in those five events or you are... not going to get when the big guns come back, starting really at Torrey.
Yeah,
a lot of the rookie and young guys don't get into a lot of those events, so there's a lot of pressure on you immediately to get out of the bottom of that priority.
And I didn't get into Vegas or Mayakoba.
Yeah,
my priority number, it just wasn't high enough. Okay. And we probably had 15 of us Monday qualifying for both those events. Jesus. Trying to get in.
God,
yeah, so it was tough. It was really tough. Yeah. And when you miss the two, like assume that you're only going to get in maybe two or three events and you've missed the first two cuts, you're like pulling out your hair like, oh my gosh, is this already over before it's even started?
That's the deal. What people don't think about a lot, I think, is, you know, you getting your PGA Tour card doesn't mean you go play whatever PGA Tour events you want. And, you know,
it doesn't
set you up. You're not set up great for success being bought like 25th from the web to go to the PGA Tour. So it is like an extra layer of pressure. So miss the first two cuts, then what happens?
I play well at RSM, make the cut and shoot, I think a final round 65 to move me up. And that moved me from 49th to 24th in our category.
Enormous.
Huge.
Yeah.
Massive.
Because where does the cutoff for like Sony or Torrey?
Sony ran pretty deep. Torrey did not. I think Torrey was probably at like 35 or 40 maybe.
So that one round really got you into Torrey, which you parlayed into. You were in sixth, I think, going into Sunday.
Yes.
Are the nerves going then again different going into the final round of the PGA Tour?
They were pretty different.
It's a safe place. You can admit that. So are you nervous sleeping? It's not sleeping on the lead, but you're sleeping like, just for reference sake, like you're playing for every PGA Tour event you teed up, you're playing for 10x money that you ever really have played for.
Correct.
And so
that I've ever earned.
Ever. Yeah. So you
sponsors, earnings on course, gambling,
Are you? Is that what you're thinking about, or is like no, what? No, what are you thinking about at that point?
I actually had a pretty good mindset this week, this past week, and it was knowing it was going to be difficult, knowing it was going to be something different, and doing everything I can just to accept what came. Just my acceptance levels. I'm just trying to give myself every opportunity, trying to be my best friend out there that I could possibly be. Because I knew if I'm going out and just, you know, beating myself up after every, you know, so-so shot or I miss a birdie putt, I'm like, oh, gosh, and you're not going to get another one. You just ruined it. No, like you're not going to. That's not going to help you play well. And so that last week, I had a really good mindset each round going into it, saying, hey, you're going to have your opportunities. Trust yourself that you're going to be able to get more. Even if you don't take advantage of a few you have early on, they'll come. Stay patient. Trust yourself. Accept what happens. And I did. I played really well for the first three rounds. Unfortunately, I missed too many greens the last day and was just around that golf course. You can't really miss too many greens.
It catches up to you quickly at Torrey Pines.
It does.
But so in six, so you've had six starts. You made three cuts.
Yes.
You've made 100K so far this year on the PGA Tour. And I think you made 160K last year on the Web Tour.
Yeah.
So that just kind of gives you an idea of the range and difference, and just kind of, I don't know. Everybody knows there's a lot of money in professional golf, but you know, just seeing some of the size of some of the paychecks that come, and like the guys that are doing this for the first time, this is a very serious thing.
So. I think I saw one of your tweets right after Adam Long had won. I mean, Adam's been a pro for 5 years, 6 years, maybe.
I think even longer than that. Yeah.
He doubled his earnings in 1 week.
Yeah.
His career earnings in 1 week. He made
585K or something through 8 professional seasons.
Exactly.
And then won $1 million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. And it's awesome. It's the opportunities that we have out here on the PGA Tour to provide for our families, to play in front of fans the way that we do is incredible. Mm-hmm. It is so, so unique and so cool.
So what's next for you? And what are you in events going? Are you, but the reshuffle is
after Genesis.
After Genesis. So will you slide up again based on your finish at Torrey? Or you?
I would hope so.
Yeah.
I would really hope so. Yeah. I don't know though. And that's kind of the scary thing. And we were planning out travel. It's like, well, we're going to Pebble Beach next week and maybe Los Angeles, do the Monday qualifier for Los Angeles, and then we'll go down to Puerto Rico. And after Puerto Rico, I'd love to play here in Florida, but same time, it's like, but this new schedule, you don't know how many guys are going to want to be playing early in Florida, if they're going to be doing prep for the Players that's coming up here in about a month, and it's coming up soon, really quick. We have two WGCs in the next 6 weeks, I think. Like, it's packed.
Yeah.
It's very packed early on. So I have, honestly, other than Pebble and Puerto Rico, I don't really know where I'll be playing next. Well,
it's funny to hear like your excitement for WGCs, which means that there's an opposite field event.
That you're, it's our major. Puerto Rico and Dominican.
How do flights work? I mean, what do you, like you said, you don't know what you're going on to Pebble. Do you have a return flight booked, or do you figure that out? Is it expensive to fly last minute all the time?
Yes, it definitely, you lose couple hundred bucks every time. And I travel with my wife. I'm very thankful that she's out there with me now. It's way more enjoyable than it was when you're traveling alone, despite what Curtis and Max may think about, you know, hanging out together every afternoon, every night. It does get expensive, but we have a rental car booked from Monterey to LA one way, and hopefully we can drop it off and trade it in for a courtesy car that week and stay in LA and then fly from LA to San Juan, Puerto Rico, but we'll see.
God, that's amazing. All right. If we're going to predict the event that you have your first PGA Tour win at, what would you guess the event is going to be? What's a golf course that you're like, okay, that one's for me?
I don't know. I honestly couldn't tell you. I haven't seen. Can I tell you where I would love to win for the first time? Bay Hill.
Okay.
I grew up here in Orlando. Mm-hmm. I didn't play Bay Hill until I was a professional. I went out to the tournament, never was invited out to play, never got on the golf course to actually play. I had walked it. Actually followed Sam Saunders around when I was in high school. After we went to the same high school here in Orlando. Huge fan of his growing up when he went to Clemson, turned pro. He was playing in the third round with Colin Montgomery in like 2010, 2011 or something like that. I think I saw every shot Sam hit. That round. And it was awesome. It was fun. It was so cool. And it was something that I love going out and seeing. Arnold Palmer has such a not only huge impact in the golf world, but here in Orlando. I mean, he has the Arnold Palmer Hospital, the Winnie Palmer Hospital for Women and Children. I mean, this is something that you know, half of my friends here in Orlando were born at Arnold Palmer Hospital. Mm-hmm. And he had such a huge effect on the town and the city that winning at home, place that I grew up going to the event would be so cool.
Looking for an exemption there into that one?
No.
Send that audio right over.
I wouldn't do that.
That would be pretty sweet. All right, last question. When was the last time you paid for golf?
Last time I paid for golf. More recently than I'm probably proud to say.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
No, that's a prideful thing.
Definitely when I went out to play. Every time I go out to play Winter Park 9,
okay,
I'll pay the $15 or $20 or whatever it is.
How often do you go out there?
Four times a year, five times a year, mm-hmm. maybe.
What do you think of it?
It's a blast. It's the best. I think it should be compulsory for all golfers in Central Florida, or at least junior golfers, to go play.
What do you love about it?
The redesign's so much fun. It provides so many different opportunities to hit shots. It's cheap. It's easy to go out there and walk nine holes. It's going to take less than an hour and a half to walk nine holes.
What do you shoot out there? Every time I go out there, I'm like, all right, this course is easy. It's 2,300 yards, nine holes, and I don't think I've broken par on it once. But I imagine it's different for you.
Before the redesign, which is it was the same exact shapes of holes and everything, but very different style.
The greens were way different. But
yes, they were much easier.
Yeah.
I probably shot 10 times when I was out there, but since the redesign, probably 5-4 under maybe. Okay. That's 31,
that's,
I think,
about
out
31
there.
I mean, but it's not simple is the thing.
No, and I also don't hit more than a 4-iron.
Okay, that'll do it for you.
It's a little short. I mean, the first hole is 230 yards or something like that.
Par 4.
Yeah,
par's irrelevant, but but the shorter courses actually end up testing your long irons more than like I hit way more long irons at Winter Park than I do any course I play in Jacksonville.
And you're a little nervous because there's some nice cars driving
around. And they come into play on more than one hole.
Yeah, so. I've hit a few graves, tombstones as well.
Trying to cut the corner.
Not proud of that. Sorry, didn't mean to disturb anybody. But
I think we've covered most of everything. Anything glaring that I missed there?
Not that I'm aware of.
Nothing you're trying to get off your chest?
No, nothing I'm trying to get off my chest.
Well, thanks for spending the time. I know you got a big important accounting meeting here in a couple hours as you're now making real money. So but congratulations on making it to the tour. We look forward to following you and hope the best for you.
Thank you, Sally. Thank you all for the hard work you guys put on. It's awesome stuff.
Appreciate that. Cheers.
Cheers.
Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different.